Well, last week, cinema lost one of its great talents, the Lithuanian-born New York avant-garde filmmaker Jonas Mekas, who died aged 96. Not a household name, but a filmmaker held in high regard by critics universally. And I think today there's something oddly familiar and prescient about much of his autobiographical diaristic works, films like Diaries, Notes and Sketches, also known as Walden from 1969, or his 2000 film As I Was Moving Ahead, Occasionally I Saw Brief Glimpses of Beauty. They almost seem like precursors to the highly personal image making we see online today in vlogs and even in webcams, but they are, of course, so much more. Mekas, until his death, remained an inspirational figure in the avant-garde world, and he was also a great champion of other people's works. He was a published poet and a critic, and joining me now to discuss him further is someone who knows a lot more about him than I do. It's critic and film scholar Serena Masukor, who has a particular interest in where the art gallery meets the art film, I guess. Hi, Serena. How are you?
Hi, Jason.
So, yeah, sad news, but he had a good innings. Now, where... we talk about him coming from Lithuania. Tell me about the beginnings of his life.
Yeah, Mekas was born on Christmas Eve in 1922 in Lithuania in a farming village called Semeniskai. Don't know if I've said that right.
Yeah.
During his teenage years, he did write poetry, and he continued to write poetry through his life. When the Second World War began, he was in his early 20s, and he started editing an underground newspaper. In 1944, sensing the Nazis were coming, he and his brother Adolphus tried to leave Lithuania for Vienna, but unfortunately their train was stopped in Germany and they were taken into a forced labour camp.
Did that have much effect on his later life? A lot's been made of the fact, of course, he served this terrible time in a forced labour camp. Did that sort of pop up as a theme in his work directly or indirectly, do you think?
Yeah, well, so they escaped in 1945 and hid on a farm near the Danish border for 2 months until the war ended. And then when he was 27, he and Adolphus were resettled in Brooklyn. So many years later, he actually made the journey again in reverse for a film, a 1974 film called Reminiscence of a Journey to Lithuania. But I guess in terms of the trauma of what that experience would have been, he's kind of an incredibly resilient and a joyful person. And in that sense, it doesn't. But there's definitely this film that retraces that exact journey.
How is his work seen? But let's get a sense of his work, because it is very interesting. And as I sort of said, I mean, it's beautiful work. And I think contemporary audiences are really well primed to understand it in some way, on a visceral way. But how is his work seen for the first time by people? I mean, you've taught his work in universities.
So for the past few years, I've taught one of my favourites of his films, which is Walden, which you mentioned, 1969 film. It's a 16mm film structured around the four seasons and compiled of fragments of personal home movie-like footage that's been edited together in a sort of cascade of moments that accumulate, giving it a beautiful impression of a life well lived.
Yeah, I mean, you can see excerpts of it online.
It's available on DVD as well.
Yeah, which people should buy.
So for like viewers like my students who mostly aren't familiar with watching experimental work, it's in some ways a difficult watch. But what's really interesting is that they always connect to the emotion that's really present in the shots, like particularly in the little moments of nature in the city that he captures, you know, with so much tenderness. Things like trees in Central Park, snow on the street, fruit in a friend's apartment. And they also always notice the skill with which the film has been edited.
Yeah.
The way he's able to pull so many discrete moments together with a tremendous sense of rhythm and design.
It is like, I mean, if you're being a careless viewer would say this is just a jumble of old, you know, home videos,
right,
home movies. And yet, you know, you pay it even a little bit of attention and you can see how beautiful it is sort of stitched together, the way that he uses dissolves to, in a very, it's all
changes
lo-fi
in
though,
speed,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, to some degree, but I mean, he was one of those filmmakers who was always happy to hand his camera over to whoever was around and they could do a bit of filming, you know, and then he had that footage as well. But, you know, in a sense it is lo-fi and in another sense, there's incredible skill to it.
Absolutely. Look, let me quote to you Amy Torben, who is a great New York critic who knew Jonas Mekas, writing in Art Forum. She writes that the impression one has as a viewer of his films is of images that are simultaneously intensely present and as elusive as memory. The images are gone before we can fully grasp them. Is that a good summary?
It's a beautiful, beautiful description. You know, and Amy Tobin, as you mentioned, now so influential, was someone who Mikus encouraged and supported when she was starting out.
That's right, to get into criticism, yeah.
Yeah, so he, his images really do feel simultaneously ephemeral and tangible. You know, they pass like the flicker of the projector or how we might remember moments from our daily lives. It's very impressionistic. You know, the camera's always mobile and connected to the body. He plays with speed. He has a tremendous love for the domestic. You know, things like pleasures, like walking in the park with friends, light falling in an apartment, you know, things like
people
posts
eating,
being
I love people
collected.
Eating as well, like drinking
so
beer
many.
And eating spaghetti or something.
Yeah, like he was always filming around dinner parties and you see like a baby playing and then someone eating some fruit and, you know, it all kind of accumulates like life does.
And we're talking about often that scene in New York, post-war New York, that was full of artists and, you know, the friends he was hanging out with.
Absolutely. He was hanging out with filmmakers like Stan Brakhage, Maya Deren, Robert Frank, Andy Warhol, Shirley Clarke, Ken Jacobs. So, yeah.
Yeah. Let me play a little bit of audio from, now this is from, as I was moving ahead, occasionally I saw brief glimpses of beauty. I think that's the clip we've got. Gives you a sense of the real idiosyncratic way that he'd record his own voice too. So this is...
Which is something that only comes in later.
Right.
I would say.
But let's hear it. I love it. It is, technically speaking, very badly recorded. But that's part of its charm. So here we have, and you'll hear his wonderful voice.
Memories, image, sound, memories, memories. No judgment here. Positive, negative, good, bad. It's just images and sounds. Very, very innocent.
There's something so profound about his films. And I think there's a lot of profundity that comes from artists that are really able to be intuitive in a very brilliant way. But tell me also about his championing of other people's works, the Anthology Film Archive. Tell me about this wonderful cinema that he founded in New York and how important it was to people, you know, well ensconced in mainstream filmmaking too, like the Coen brothers.
Yeah, well, the Coen brothers, I think, support a chair at Anthology, which is still a cinema today. And I was very lucky to see Reminiscences of a Journey to Lithuania there. It's a great place. So he had co-founded that initially, many filmmaking initiatives. So that was originally the Filmmakers Cinematheque. He also co-founded the Filmmakers Cooperative. He was the Village Voice's first film writer, writing a personal movie column called Movie Journal about the new independent and experimental films. He programmed Cassavetes' first film, Shadows, although he famously criticised it later for becoming too conventional.
Well, didn't he like, the one-hour version or something?
He liked the first edit, rough edit.
But he was a great champion of the new American cinema as well. Stuff that was
Absolutely.
Even more sort of conventional than his own work, of course.
Yes, and he was really instrumental in Andy Warhol's filmmaking career. So, you know, so much of that kind of New York scene, experimental independent film world that's become so well known connects back in some way to him.
And what describe to me what it's like going to somewhere like that. I mean, he was still alive when you went there, obviously. Was he there?
Did you see him? No. actually,
I mean, is it still a hub? Do you get a sense that a place like that is still a
absolutely.
Hub?
Absolutely. Like people still go there and watch films. They show independent films there still, and they have a collection there of experimental films, publish a newsletter. And yeah, it's a really great place.
If people now want to go away and discover the work of Jonas Mikus, us, you know, having discussed some of his work and legacy here today, what do they do? I mean, what's the best starting point, do you think?
A lot of the films are a bit hard to find, although there is a DVD collection. I would probably always start with Walden, just because it has that 60, it's before he kind of moved to digital. It's got that lovely 16mm feel to it. There's another more recent film that was, it's called Correspondences, and it's video letters between him and young filmmaker J.L. Gurin, Spanish filmmaker, I think. I'm probably getting that wrong. And it's another really beautiful introduction, I think, to his work.
I'll also say that if you're lazy, and like a lot of us are, or time poor, if you Google him on YouTube, something called, I think, a walk comes up, which is one of the, I was so surprised by it. It's him basically with a handheld video camera walking around Manhattan, just talking into the mic. And it is one of the most exquisitely structured 1 hour films I've ever seen. And I don't even think it's particularly edited, if at all. It's just this long, and it's walking around his neighborhood. Yeah. Wonderful. So anyway, well, Jonas Mekas.
I mean, he did, late in life, he did start up a website where he was constantly posting new stuff that he'd published. So all you can right. find that too.
A lot online. Serena Masukor, thank you very much for helping us remember Jonas Mekas.
Thanks,
here
Jason.
On The Screen Show.